One of the most elite men's clubs in the country has today voted to continue excluding women from its membership. For nearly two centuries, the Australian Club has only allowed women to visit when they're guests of male members. Some of the club's associates include John Howard, George Pell, Malcolm Turnbull, Tony Abbott and James Packer. The club says the 75% threshold needed to pass the resolution wasn't reached. Professor Kim Rubenstein is the co-director of the 50-50 by 2030 Foundation and a professor in the Faculty of Business, Government and the Law at the University of Canberra, and she joins me now. Professor Rubenstein, welcome to the program.
Thank you, PK.
What do you make of the club's decision to continue a private club without inclusion of women as members?
Look, I think it's shocking on a number of levels, but it was expected as well if you think about its origins and its current makeup.
The vote comes 2 years after the club was first questioned on female members, to which former federal court judge Peter Graham said was based on fallacious reasoning. Why hasn't this been addressed earlier?
Look, I think we have long-standing institutional problems in relation to gender equality, and private clubs do represent some of those outdated notions, but it's their private nature that perhaps has shielded them unnecessarily in the past, and more people are becoming aware about how inappropriate that is and how that distinction between private and public clubs is no longer one that is worthy of affirmation.
Do you believe the club should be allowed to continue without the inclusion of female members?
Absolutely not. And I think that in a democratic, liberal democratic country like Australia, in a modern Australia, that these institutional frameworks are outdated and that society more broadly should be challenging the continuation of those. I mean, professional associations are appropriate for the particular values of members of professional associations having time to share ideas and contributions together, but making them exclusive and having specific regulations as to who can be in and out that are in their own ways discriminatory just can no longer be acceptable.
We have men's and women's sheds. Some clubs simply are gender-based. Why is this club different?
Well, I think when you think about different associations, there might be contexts where some forms of separation may be appropriate. But this is about enabling groups in society to spend time together, to network together, to further professional associations. We're living in a world in which women are fully and appropriately involved in professional life, in our public civic life. They should be and they should continue to be even more and more. That is why a club like this should no longer be able to segregate, because it's seeking to deny women's equal participation in public life, which is just no longer an appropriate. And it's not healthy for Australian society as a whole, let alone for those who wish to continue it.
So we have, as I say, women's and men's sheds. So we do have some segregation already. You think this is a specific kind of segregation. So after a decision like this, and much like we have seen in politics in recent months, why would a woman now want to join a club like this anyway?
Well, certainly the notion of a woman wanting to be part of a discriminatory club and anyone wanting to be part of a discriminatory club raises significant questions. But the idea of professional associations and the opportunity to meet with fellow workers during lunch, during after working hours, is not an unreasonable one for individuals wanting to further their particular interests in that particular area of work or particular area of public activity. So for women to want to be part of those clubs in their sense of not being discriminatory clubs, but associations to further their professional interests, is not unusual. But what is unusual is that continued commitment to discriminatory membership.
Do you think this speaks to more broad structures still in place in our culture?
I do indeed, PK, and I think that this is a healthy reminder in an unhealthy way, in the sense of a reminder that there are institutional structures around Australia today that still create the hurdles for women and men and women from a range of different backgrounds who were not in as in members of the elites of the turn of the century, who are more and more becoming important and active citizens, it's a reminder that there are these structures in place that still make it difficult for women and for men and women of diverse backgrounds to really, truly be contributing to public life in Australia. So whilst we're seeing changes in our parliament, in our boardrooms, they're not significant enough to represent Australia today. And a decision like this club's today is a reminder that there are other structures within our parliament, within our boardrooms, that still make it so difficult to overcome those hurdles for equality.
Does this make your goal of 50-50 by 2030 feel unachievable?
I think it makes our goal much more pressing and significant. And perhaps what I would say is it's a reminder that we have to act now, that the mission of a foundation like ours of achieving equality by 2030 becomes more and more pressing because not enough significant change has occurred within the time that it should have. So we need to place these markers. We need to say this is urgent because even though we've made significant changes, these sorts of decisions are still being made openly, but they're also being made in a less transparent way by virtue of the structures that are still in place in our parliament. And it's why we're calling our symposium that we're holding over the next 2 days Equals Now, because we have to act now in order to make those changes by 2030.
Okay, so I was going to that symposium. What does acting now look like? Give me some examples.
Yeah, so acting now looks like actually thinking about three different areas of society to ensure equal participation in leadership. We've called it share the load, share the benefits, share the power. And what we're saying is that in all segments and areas of society, whether it be in the domestic or private sphere, like a club like this, or whether it be in the private sphere in terms of our homes, and in the private and non-public worlds in which we all participate in, whether it be in our family lives or in our clubs and societies, we need to ensure that men and women have equal participation in those aspects of our lives in order for that to flow into the public sphere and public leadership. And then the second area we're looking at during the symposium is sharing the benefits, that is the economic frameworks that enable the equality of participation in that private and public sphere. So our tax system, the parental leave system, which links back into that domestic sphere, and the levers, economic levers that are in play. Superannuation frameworks, those, and of course equal pay. All those factors also contribute to equality of opportunity. And then of course the share the power, the idea that we need to drill down into those structures of power in parliament, in cabinet, in terms of political advisers, in terms of the ways that power plays out both in our representative democracy, but also in our boardrooms and in questions of harassment in the workplace. They all link together. And so we're bringing together both the cutting-edge research in these areas plus policymakers plus the political actors to really try and show and pick those connections and work out ways to act now.
We know now that we have this women's cabinet that meets, and all these ministers have been appointed to it, led by Maurice Payne,
yes,
who is the Minister for Women. Do you think, is there any evidence that that's working well in your view and that we're getting good outcomes?
Well, it's only recent, as you said, so we haven't seen any immediate consequences. I mean, we had a budget that did actually have attention to a women's economic statement, but it didn't go the next step in terms of gender-responsive budgeting and gender-responsive policy development, which you would hope the Women's Cabinet would also be encouraging of all the ministers in relation to the development of policy and the economic structures that flow from that. And I think when we think about our cabinet, we shouldn't have a divided women's cabinet and men's cabinet, but rather a cabinet which is concerned with policy across every area of society being analysed through a gender lens, and having a range of and a mix of people in the cabinet to show the diversity of lived experience and to have the diversity of lived experience that then influences those cabinet decisions.
And that equality of participation of women, I mean, if you look around the boardrooms and if you look around the federal cabinet, we are still a way off there.
Yeah.
How do you make it faster?
So look, there are quite a few different ideas that are being raised in this symposium. One that I'm actually discussing in my own paper is about thinking about job sharing in Parliament. What about if two people from diverse backgrounds who cannot commit to full-time work but can work together to actually represent an electorate or be in the Senate? What about if we enabled people to vote for, because of course the people still have to vote for that person to be their representative, that those two people to job share? That's one way of disrupting our thinking about how we get more people into Parliament. Quotas, of course, are another framework in thinking of how we ensure that we get there quicker. Quotas that recognise, in the way that quotas in our Senate, we have quotas in terms of Senate representation and a federal system being a commitment to state representation. We should be talking more openly about quotas for gender and for a range of life experiences from Australia. And then, of course, within this Senate committees and within other frameworks, I think need to start being much more creative about the ways in which those structures could be changed to enable a more representative body.
Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you. And to remind people, they can still register online if they Google Equals Now Symposium University of Canberra.
Professor Kim Rubenstein there, the co-director of the 50-50 by 2030 Foundation and professor in the Faculty of Business, Government and Law at the University of Canberra.